Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on, 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. Sign Guy with you like usual. My co-host QT Vokes on assignment today. He may not make it in time for today, but he'll be back with us Sunday. So, if you are looking for some wrestling today, we got some show notes for you. Tonight, WCWO, like usual, at the Outlaw Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana. 3-2-1 here in our neck of the woods in Seattle. It is your last chance to see Otis the Gimp as he is moving back down to California. So if you can make it, get out there, see off Otis the Gimp. PWA in Campbell River, B.C. APW in Royston, Georgia. NCW in Cornelia, Georgia. RCCW in Richmond, Indiana, CKCW in Parma, Ohio, and SCW in St. Paul, Minnesota. Tomorrow night, CZW in Voorhees, New Jersey, 302 Pro Wrestling in Harrington, Delaware, ICW in Miami, Florida, PFCW in Rockford, Illinois, Black Label Pro in Crown Point, Indiana, NFW in Evansville, Indiana, KCXW in Kansas City, Missouri, UPW in Horse Cave, Kentucky, PVPW in Springfield, Massachusetts, MEPW in Belgium, Wisconsin, and HMW in San Antonio, Texas tomorrow night. Without further ado, I would like to welcome our guest to the show, someone I've been very excited to have on the program. He is the president of wrestling, Philip Stamper. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. How are you tonight?
Doing very well. Now, since today is your first time with us, you get the traditional first-timers question to start things off today. What led you into the business of professional wrestling?
I was a fan. I think, you know, that's probably the way most people get in is I was a kid who got into pro wrestling, and I'm also that person and was at that when I was a kid of, okay, I really like this thing. How does it work? So at a really young age, I wrote to the WWE and WCW at the time and asked about, hey, how do I get involved in pro wrestling? And they, well, WCW wrote back and talked to me about training. And it was my first sort of open doorway to find out, oh, there are things like training schools. And so even at a really young age, I kind of knew, all right, to move on, I need to be involved with independent wrestling and get involved with a good training school, and knew that really early. So for me, it was an interest at a young age that continued to get fostered until I eventually ended up in the business.
And when you got that letter back from WCW, which of course was one of the largest wrestling promotions in the world when it was active, mm-hmm. What was the mindset like as someone that was an outsider and you're being given instructions on what to do to potentially get into the business from one of the largest promotions?
I mean, again, to put context to it, I was probably in middle school at the time, and it was like, wow, this is cool. I was probably a little bit more attuned, though, because I remember the first opening paragraphs were about, you know, my actually responding to my letter, which I thought was kind of neat. And the last paragraph, though, was to find out more about wrestling, and I cannot remember the name of this book. It was buy this book. Let's say it was Inside Pro Wrestling. I don't think that's what it was called, but buy this book and it'll tell you more about how to get involved in professional wrestling. So in my brain as a kid, I was like, are they really trying to get money out of me? and I remember that at such a young age to put that together.
And once you do actually get into the business of professional wrestling and you have been working in it for a while, was it anything like what you had thought it was going to be when you very first started wrestling inquiries and trying to find out about it? Or was it how you had imagined it based on WCW's interaction with you, or did you find that it was completely different from anything you had imagined?
Yes to all of that. some of it because it, and I'm trying to remember, you know, when did I learn what, I'm losing sort of my track of it, but the fact I felt like, okay, so they reached back out to me. I was like, all right, so there's going to be some communication. I also grew up and was a young kid at the time of like the WWE steroid scandal and, you know, all these sort of things that were out there about how quote unquote crazy wrestlers were. And by the time I was getting into wrestling, ECW was just, was out there. And there was a lot of like, are these guys legit? Are they crazy? Are they really like this? And so before I jumped, you know, full headfirst into the pool, I worked backstage for a couple of companies because I was like, if I'm going to go do this, if I'm going to spend the money to go get trained, I want to make sure that this is a business and an industry I really want to be in. So I went and worked backstage for IPWA that was ran by Q-Ball Carmichaels at the time in Virginia, and a company called a Different Wrestling Federation that was ran in Pennsylvania, and worked backstage. I did ring crew and sound and security, and just to see, like, is this really what I want to be a part of? And at the time, I don't do drugs, but at the time I was also like anti-drinking. I was raised unfortunately with a lot of friends and family members who did go down that path, and that's not something I wanted to be a part of. And I was like, I want to see if I get into wrestling, is this going to be all I see? And when I did, I was like, I don't see it. I don't see people, I didn't even see people drunk. I didn't see people using anything. And it was like, all right, this isn't that kind of community. This isn't the stereotype that had been portrayed in the media at the time of what professional wrestling was. And I was really appreciative of that. So when the time came to find a good place to go train, I was already feeling pretty comfortable about being in the business.
Q-Ball Carmichael is someone that today is pretty revered among independent wrestlers, extremely well-known trainer. He wrestled at a top level for many years. He's ran his own promotions. Getting involved with Q-Ball Carmichael at that age, do you think that he was someone that might have set you on the right path really quickly in your career?
I think so. I think really early on, and he was certainly a part of that, I learned, you know, it's a team effort. You have to have a good, solid team in place, and you have to have good people, and you have to be willing to work with good people and find those good people. And I think he definitely taught me that, and that it really wasn't about only what you were seeing on the in-ring product. It was really about everybody coming together, everybody from who's taking tickets, because that has to be somebody that you trust because they're dealing with your money, to the guys who are setting up your ring. Are they trustworthy? Are they going to do damage to your stuff? Especially what if you're renting? Is the ring guy going to show up? Do you have sound equipment that works? You know, I really learned a lot about the business end from Q-Ball, and how, I guess, sort of the logistics of an event need to work. And I really learned that from him and my experience at DWF. But yeah, absolutely, Q-Ball was, I would say, very instrumental. Very instrumental.
Now, fast forwarding several years, like I mentioned at the start of the program, you were known as the president of wrestling. Can you tell us a little bit how was that you became president of this industry?
So I think it's fair to say, for those who know me, not only have I been around wrestling for a long time, I work for a number of companies and deal with a lot of the business end, and that there are times where I represent those companies, whether it's in front of a crowd and talking with sponsors to dealing with press, that I de facto become quite often the face of the company just by the fact I'm putting out the word about the event, and that I like to believe, strong on the marketing end on that piece. So it started to be like, okay, I was an active wrestler for a very, very long time. And as that was starting to dwindle, and now that I've had to have neck surgery, it was like, I'm ready for sort of this next phase. What is it? But I'm still a part of wrestling, and I'm still a personality. Well, how does that represent itself? And if I'm really true to myself and I'm really, the characterization of myself, what is that best representation? And so kind of through that, being the president of wrestling sort of stood out.
Al, as you travel around and you work for various companies, do you get a lot of people coming up to you and recognizing not necessarily your in-ring work as much as they are recognizing what you've done for wrestling outside of the ring as far as promoting for companies and as far as commentary and helping things run smoothly in other aspects of the business?
Yes, and to a degree that I really didn't expect on that end. So, for example, at MCW in Maryland, I'm the general manager, and I happened on New Year's Eve, I stopped off at, I think I went to Walmart to pick up snacks or something for where I was going to go to. And while I'm there, I start hearing, "Hey, Phil, hey, Phil," and I turn around, and though I was about an hour and a half away from where MCW typically runs, here was a fan from MCW who recognized me, knew me, and wanted to have this big conversation about wrestling in the middle of Walmart. That happens. Similarly, I live in Maryland. I was in Annapolis. I forget the real name of the mall, but I always knew it as just the Annapolis Mall, and had my CZW jacket on. And somebody stopped me, and they were like, "Wait a minute, oh, I know you." And we had this conversation, and she knew I did commentary, that I was their press person. So she just opened up in this conversation. So in many ways, yes, things like that keep happening. In my life outside of wrestling, I work at a school, and we hired a new wrestling coach. And I used to be involved in amateur wrestling before. And so I just reached out and said, "Hey, you're a new employee. Do you want to like get together and have lunch sometime?" "Oh, sure." So we got together. He's a huge fan of pro wrestling and specifically independent wrestling. And he already knew who I was. And that was really neat. That was really neat.
One of the things that is helpful for people, not only that are fans of wrestling, but for people that work in the industry, and in particularly for this very show, because we use it every single week, you publish a calendar of wrestling events that is extremely comprehensive. Can you tell us how that all started and what the feedback has been like for you having this calendar?
Sure. Oddly enough, the calendar came about years ago. So before its current version, I had been in wrestling for a very short time. I'd been only maybe 6 months to a year actually wrestling. And I got hurt, not even in a wrestling-connected way. I was going to school. The parking lot was iced over. I stepped out of my car, and there I went, and I landed on the back of my head. And wrenched my neck pretty good. And so for about maybe 6 months, I was like, I can't wrestle. I can't, I have to recover. I have to get healed. And I was like, but I don't want to lose the connection I have in wrestling. I'm so young inside the business. I don't want to lose that. So I started at the time I was living in Pennsylvania, to focus on the promotions that were in Pennsylvania, who all is around, what companies are running, and really just started to work with them to help put out stuff about them. At the time, I used a different name because there was, and there still is to a degree, but not as much, about how much are you putting online, kid? You know, are you going to spoil the inside of the business? Or are you going to tell my little dirty details? So I used to use a different name just so not to have to deal with that. Because all I was doing was putting up, here are events, here are the results. And that's kind of how it started. And then after about, I don't know, maybe 4 years, I decided, oh, I need to stop. I need to focus on other things, and went away from it. And then about maybe 5 years ago, I was working for CZW, and somebody who was involved with us at the time, who is no longer involved, made this sort of offhand comment about, wow, there just really isn't many independent wrestling events anymore. And I'm like, okay, one, you're in New Jersey. They're every half mile. Two, you can just look on your Facebook, and you know, I know who you have on your Facebook. You have a lot of the people I have, so you should be seeing all the stuff that they're doing. And really, it started 5 years ago up again looking at, what are my friends at Facebook saying they're on? Because most of the people on my Facebook are connected through wrestling. Okay, let me look at their flyers. Let me look on the events tab on Facebook. What's showing up? And over time, I just started to add more and more and more and more links as I was finding out about different events and would do my own research on what events were out there. And now it's just this robust list that I maintain. Right now, I have events all the way through the end of January on the calendar. And I sort of recycle, and I go through all the links, and I just see, okay, do they have anything new? Okay, yes, no, let me add it and keep moving forward. And I, like I said, I keep it up for the next several months, so that way I can just add stuff. And so when the next time frame comes, I can update it. I send out something to a small group of people saying, just, hey, you know, here's my draft for this week. Am I missing anything? Just to get some additional initial feedback. And then I send it out. I send it out to several websites. I posted on several websites and on a couple different groups in Facebook.
Well, it is a very invaluable tool to have for shows like this, and I know firsthand it has helped many a sports entertainer get a booking whenever they've gone on the road, because they've been able to see who is out there in various locations and reach out. So on behalf of wrestlers everywhere, I thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
Now, as someone that is very familiar with independent professional wrestling, someone that sees a lot of the talent that's out there, in your opinion, who are some of the unsigned talents in independent wrestling that you think are most deserving of being awarded a contract for one of the full-time national companies?
See, now you're going to get me in trouble. whenever I get asked this, I always forget somebody. And it's definitely not with any kind of intention. I think there's so much talent out in the independent level so far. And even when you look at – actually, I was going to say a name, and I'm like, oh, he is sort of signed. Because the first names that jumped to my brain was Sami Callihan and Dave and Jake Chris. Well, they work with Impact, but they're still working on the independents as well, and they're making a fine living not having to work with the WWE. Jeff Cobb is associated with Lucha Underground, but they're not filming right now. So I look at Jeff, I look at Dave Starr, I look at Maxwell Jacob Friedman, I look at Desmond Xavier and Zachary Wentz and Trey Miguel. I think of Ken Dixon out of MCW. I think of Jason Collins out of Georgia, Jaden Newman out of Tennessee, Mason Miles out of South Carolina, Eli Everfly out of California. Of course, my brain's now – this is when my brain pauses and goes, Philip, there's 500 people that you know, and why can't you think of the next person? Because there is just so much talent that is out there that could – I mean, you could create a whole other second real televised product like the WWE and fill it full of a roster of top-quality people and still have room left over. Kyle Maverick out of Georgia, I really like his work, very technical-minded. Anthony Henry, also very technical-minded, traveling everywhere in the country. Ethan Case is solid. The Ugly Ducklings are fun to watch. Colt Cabana is hilarious to watch and a solid wrestler. And people might say, well, he's a comedy guy. Well, but he knows how to wrestle. He can back it up with comedy, but he could just wrestle and not be a comedian. And I think we would all enjoy the work that he has to offer. So I think there's just so much great talent that's out there right now.
I definitely agree with that. There's never been a stronger independent talent pool than right now, in my opinion. Now, one of the things that you are known for, of course, that a lot of wrestlers struggle with, not only on the bigger stages, but also on the independent level for sure, is the talking aspect of wrestling, being able to do interviews and so forth, very important in today's world of wrestling, and with fewer managers around compared to years past, it makes it even more important for the wrestlers to be able to deliver their own interviews and be able to do them well. What advice would you give to young wrestlers that need help with the talking aspect of professional wrestling?
So in a way, it goes in line with the same thing about the in-ring aspect of wrestling. Find somebody more experienced and show them what you have. And get feedback on what you're doing, because sometimes it's not a one simple thing. I know some people who, you know, there's those guys who practice, guys and ladies, I should say, who practice their promos in the car all the time, and they have a great start to that next promo that they're going to cut, and then they don't know how to end it. And they get, it's like they start off great, and then they just don't know where to go, and you feel that, like, hesitation. What should I do? Say next? Yay me. And they get lost. Other people aren't necessarily good presenters. So some people need to work on their actual voice. Some people are flat when they talk. They don't have any emotion. Some guys think a promo is nothing but screaming, and that can work for some people, but maybe it's different for you. You know, look at a Jake Roberts, who quite often his promos were very quiet. It was very intentional to get you to listen. It was, you know, I love things like that where you can use your voice or tell a story inside of your promo in a very short amount of time. And it takes skill and it takes practice to do that. So practice it, but bounce it off other people to get their feedback and knowledge about, hey, what can I do better? What can I do differently?
Now, as a commentary person, do you see that translates over to being able to coach guys on promos as well? Do you, as a commentator, when you interview someone or they do guest commentary, are you able to guide them a little bit and help them improve using that aspect of the business?
Yes, if they're willing to. Let me guide them. No, if they think they're already good and won't try to interact. So part of being on a commentary team, if there's more than just you on there, is you're playing off the other person. And some people are like, nope, I have my business to cut and that's all I'm doing. And don't realize some of it is an interaction. So I then will change myself a little bit and start going into the more asking questions kind of realm to get out of them maybe a response. But then some of those guys don't know how to do that either. So again, it is about a little bit of that practice. And I found a lot of guys, hey, Phil, we're going to have you do this interview segment where you're going to interview a guy. And you go up for the interview, and the guy doesn't want to do an interview. He's like, I'm here to cut my own promo. I have my own agenda. Here we go. And they're not good at cutting the promo. So then the whole segment goes to waste. Some guys need to just slow down and realize, like, everybody's here to help you. It's not going to hurt. Don't worry. Like, let's work together. And just by the fact of being a commentator, I don't think makes me good at teaching promos or coaching somebody, but I have the experience to help some people along. And I have, outside of my world of wrestling, I've been fortunate to have some acting experiences as well. So I can, and broadcasting experiences. I have a college degree in mass communication. So I have some other experiences I can draw on, and not just on the commentary piece, to help give other people some experience and knowledge.
Now, as a commentary person, let's use that specifically in this instance. I'm sure there's been instances where you have seen someone get a fairly significant injury during the course of a match. What would you say was the worst injury you've seen while on commentary, and what did you do in order to try to cover for the injury?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. I would say there have been times where, you know, me as a having been in the ring and knowing when something might not have gone right, and that someone might really be hurt, I find myself having a moment of being anxious because I want to make sure they're okay. You know, I'm concerned about their well-being, and especially if it's someone I might be a little bit closer to, like, are they really okay? Are they really good? And I may vamp, you know, based on whatever the story is or what's going on. And it, to some respects, I mean, certainly if somebody's viciously injured, I'm not going to, you know, call on it and reference it and all that. But if I'm in that sort of realm of being unsure, I make it work in the match. I mean, people aren't stupid. They're watching it. They've seen it happen. I'm not going to, you know, rag on it, but I'm going to be like, oh, did you just see what so-and-so did? And talk a little bit about it, but focus on the storyline, especially if I see that people are being checked on in that moment. Because you can't stop. It's still going. You're still talking. And it might have been something that that the guy's going to work to his advantage, and it was a ploy to get back into the ring. You don't know. So in many respects, you have to keep going, and you don't stop. You can be concerned and sound concerned and let people know you are concerned, because even if it was a ploy by the guy who's seemingly injured, then you're just helping to express that through your own commentary. The worst injury I've ever seen while I was on commentary, I would say that's a hard one, just because there was a time when I was while working at CZW, I wasn't doing commentary, so I've seen a lot of just random injuries, but not having to talk about it at the same time. I've seen a couple of people knocked out while I'm on commentary. I don't know how to word this. This is going to sound weird. The most vicious injury to me wasn't actually like somebody broke an arm or, you know, did some kind of horrible damage. Actually, it was at a CZW event, and I can't remember who we wrestled, but it was with Drake Younger. And Drake Younger took I think it's called a Kenzan. It's like a little circle, maybe like 4 inches around, 3 inches around, but there's like 100 little on this. And he took one to the head. And after the show, I'm in the locker room, and they're pulling this out of his head. And I have never heard a human make the sound I heard him make from the pain he was in. And to help give some context to that, my mother was an OBGYN nurse, so I heard people while they were giving birth. And just, I've never heard pain like that before. And that is like, it almost made me nauseous just to hear him. I've never heard a sound like that before.
I can imagine Drake Younger making sounds like that from pain. And, yeah, he's been through a bit.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you ever saw footage of the time I broke my face in a battle royal in Columbus, Indiana, but, you know, the doctors actually watched that footage, and like you were saying, they wanted to operate on my leg, which was a ploy to get back into the ring rather than, you know, fixing my face, which was not. Oh, I completely get what you're saying with that. Now, my co-host QT is unable to be with us today, but he left me a series of questions to ask in his absence, so I will get through those. So, Thez, help us both if I go through QT's question. His first one, he wants to know if you happen to know a wrestler named Low Life Louie.
I am familiar with him. I don't know him personally, but I've met him and I know of him, yes.
All right. His next question is, in 2012, you played the role of Hammer in the movie Ninjas vs. Monsters. Did you team up with another actor to kill the Wolfman? And in the near future, due to political correctness, do you see future movies where the Wolfman will be called the Wolf Person?
I'm trying to think. I think in the movie I might have shot the Wolfman. I don't think I was teamed with anybody when I did it. And no, the Wolfman will always be the Wolfman.
His next question. A brief description of your movie Ninjas vs. Monsters goes like this. In this final installment, the ninjas and their friends find themselves pitted against the most evil and memorable monsters of them all. Dracula, Frankenstein, the mummy, the werewolf, and more. His question is, under the more category, was one of the monsters Democrat Nancy Pelosi, who recently gave a 7-hour speech on the floor of the Senate on why she opposes the Trump spending bill?
On that regard, I'll say no.
All right. And he wants to know, who is the lead ninja in the movie?
There is not a lead because there are three ninjas.
Uh-huh.
Actually, there's more than the three, but there's a core of three, and they are a cohesive team.
All right, QT's final question. Did you get to work with actor Peter Swinburne, who had the role of Lord Stabs-a-Lot?
No.
All right. There is QT's portion of the show. So, continuing on, one of the things that wrestlers have used to sort of enjoy the independence as much as the larger shows in recent years is Botchamania. There are people on every stage of wrestling that tune into Botchamania to watch that and get a laugh or two at people's mistakes in the ring. Have you been a proponent of Botchamania?
I would say it has its particular place. I am on it twice for sure with PWU commentary during a match that was featured on Botchamania. And I feel like Matthew interviewed me for a segment that I don't think saw the light of day. I'm not against it. I really am not. I think, though, I am against where, you know, mistakes happen. And they're not intentional. And so I think when people are really trying to put their best foot forward and a wrong thing happens, you know, somebody goes for like a springboard moonsault and the rope breaks. Well, that's not the fault of the wrestler. I don't fault the ring crew. It's a odd mistake that happens. I don't like that so much. Just because it's like, well, you know, don't make fun of the person. You know, they're really trying their all. That sometimes got to me. But as a general being in existence, I'm not against it.
Now, while watching shows like Botchamania, do you see that more as an entertainment property, or do you see it as something that wrestlers can learn from, maybe by seeing mistakes that people have made and maybe figuring out a way to avoid those in the future?
I mean, that is definitely one way to think about it. I think it depends a little bit on how it's showcased, because there are, like I said, there are times when something is shown where it's like, they're just picking it apart and pointing it out when it was not really the wrestler's fault per se. And there are other times when, yeah, like, okay, this was a mistake and they can learn from it. So I think it's also a mix of how it's been presented as well.
Now, as someone that has been in the ring for many, many years like yourself, and someone that now gets to see wrestling through a little bit different set of eyes as a commentator and as a general manager, I'm sure you've seen people with all levels of types of wrestling gear, be it really ridiculous looking gear to extremely professional looking high quality gear to gear that was looking like something that might barely work in a context of a professional wrestling show, who would you say has some of the best wrestling gear right now that you've seen?
Oh, wow. Will Ospreay's Spider-Man UK gear is kind of cool. I mean, I'm a comic book fan in the first place and a Spider-Man fan, and so I was like, oh, look, it's Spider-Man. And then I look at it, and it's like it starts as Spider-Man, but it merges into the Union Jack, and I'm like, that's just a cool design. So I've always appreciated that. Who else is out there? That I'm trying to think, like, who have I seen that's like, oh, wow, that's cool gear. Caleb Conley, because he used to work with High Spot, so he used to make his own gear a lot. It was like every time I saw him, it wasn't so much necessarily the look of the gear, but it was like he always had something new. So instead of coming out and like what you might have seen him before, he was always trying to change it up and like give a different visual appearance, which I thought was a different characteristic than you see from a lot of guys.
Someone that, like I said, sees all levels of gear. Are there any type of gimmicks in professional wrestling that require a different type of gear than what your standard professional wrestler would use that bothers you seeing used in the context of pro wrestling?
Yeah. I don't like seeing regular tennis shoes in the ring. Like, I'm cool with wrestling shoes. I'm cool with boots. I'm cool with kick pads. Like, for some reason, though, when I see tennis shoes, I'm like, come on. Like, I don't know. And that's just me. I happen to be watching, I think, the Royal Rumble, and I was with other people from wrestling. And I happened to mention something about somebody who was wearing tennis shoes. And they were like, oh, what? What? And, like, I was the only person who noticed. And I was like, well, maybe it is me. But for some reason, that I don't like. And people who wear boxing boots. So it's like a wrestling shoe has a very thin sole. But boxing boots are like a very thin sole, but then a high cut like a boot. But it's like a felt-covered thing. I'm like, it looks like somebody's wearing a moccasin. Like, I just don't have that preference either.
I blame Batista for the wrestling tennis shoes craze.
Now, Batista or Blue Tista?
It was Blue Tista, as I recall it. Yeah, that started popping up right after that with the standard response. Well, Batista did it.
And my response would be, are you Batista?
That's usually what I use. Followed by it, and it doesn't mean he was right.
Right.
Now, wrestling today is much, much different than it was, say, 20, 30 years ago when people would normally start their careers at a very young age. A lot of the legends of the past started when they were mere teenagers and worked full-time in wrestling, making full-time livings. It's a totally different world now. But you still see wrestlers getting in there when they're in their teenage years. There's a lot of good independent wrestlers that are still in high school and wrestle when they can outside of their school activities. Who would you say has been the youngest competitor that you have ever seen?
Oh, wow. Okay, the youngest one that I've ever seen is when Colby Carino wrestled Don Montoya when he was 3 years old.
That is fairly young.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Now, did Colby go over in this match?
Yes, he did.
All right.
It was a fun match, to be honest. It was fun. It was exactly what it should have been for a three-year-old versus a fully grown man. Like it made sense in that regard. It was just fun.
Now, there are a lot of second and third and a few instances fourth generation wrestlers right now. I've seen a lot of this on the independent level in the last 5 to 6 years. Who are some of the families out there that have begun putting out multiple generations that fans may not realize are out there right now?
That's a good question. I just mentioned Colby Carino. You know, he's the son of Steve Carino. We have that is a really good question, and I feel like I know more than I'm remembering in the moment. There are I think because for me and my generation, for the, you know, a lot of the guys who might be of that age for their kids getting in, I think you're going to start seeing a little bit more of a lot of second generation indie guys come up very soon. Brian Pillman Jr. is now wrestling and is on the scene. Chris Benoit's son has trained under, I think he went to the Lance Storm Academy. Sean Studd, who is the son of WWE Hall of Famer Big John Studd, he's wrestling now. Let's see, who else is out there? I know that's where it immediately went to my brain to start. I'm sure there are more that I'm not thinking of, because a lot of the people you're seeing on TV have kids. And I've heard some of them say, my son or daughter will never be in wrestling. We'll see. We'll see. I think there's probably more that we're going to see in the next couple of years come up.
I bring up Brian Pillman Jr. He just started his professional career in the last few weeks. His first match was against a third-generation wrestler by the name of Jonathan Wolf, who I've competed against many times. He's extremely good at a very young age. When guys like Brian Pillman Jr. get in there and guys like Sean Studd, do you think it's easier for them now as opposed to when you first started in the wrestling as a second generation wrestler, or do you think that there might be more pressure from the fans and from the people within the industry on these guys?
You just sort of just defined it in two different ways. I think the industry has one expectation and fans have a different expectation. So like I look at a Sean Studd. Sean himself is 6'6". He's a big guy. People have sort of this certain thought of like, well, this is how a big man wrestles. And the industry says something about, well, you're Big John Studd. You need to do some of the same things that Big John Studd did. And I don't really think you have to be beholden onto that. So it's up to each individual person to be able to like break out of a particular mold for whatever reason. Because from the fans' perspective, and this is with absolutely no disrespect, but the majority of the mainstream fans didn't know Big John Studd. So it's going to be a little bit easier to get away from that perception for Sean Studd, because not as many casual fans are around who remember him. Meanwhile, Brian Pillman Jr., I think more people currently remember Brian Pillman than they do than they would comparatively to Big John Studd. And so I think there's going to be a little bit more of like, okay, does he wrestle like his dad? Is he a fly? Does he move in that same kind of fast pace? Or is his personality the same? Is he reckless? Is he wild? Is he, you know, in a crazy man? Like, how am I as a fan going to translate him being Brian Pillman's son? And I think there's a little bit with that. And I think on that end, the industry might say, like, wait a minute, you know, is it going to be too much like his dad? Do we need to pull back a little bit from having those same kind of expectations? So in some ways it's unfair because I think it's different by person. I think it's different by talent. At the same side, fans want good wrestling. Fans want to see entertainment. They want to be entertained at the end of the day. And that's not me talking about the difference between pro wrestling and sports entertainment. That's just me talking about, like, I turn on the TV, I want to like what I'm watching. Whether it's professional wrestling or I'm watching the next episode of The Flash. Like, they want to like what they are seeing happen in front of them, regardless of what it is. So they want to be entertained by what they're seeing, and I think that is the final and will always be the final proof point.
Another aspect of wrestling that has been heating up in the last few years something that might be at its hottest level right now is women's professional wrestling. There are more than a few all-women's promotions on the independent level. The national companies seem to be focusing more heavily on the women's wrestling than ever before, taking it more seriously than ever before. What's your opinion on the state of women's wrestling here in 2018?
Huh. Well, what's interesting, you know, like you mentioned that there's been women's only professional wrestling companies. Well, those have been around in some cases. I think of WSU and WOW that have been around for over 10 years. I think of Shimmer and Rise. And Shine, I think Shine a little bit newer, that have also been around for a few years. So, you know, seeing it that the WWE has quote-unquote finally come around is great. And I think what you're seeing on mainstream television now is, you know, when Miss Elizabeth was on television, she was when we thought of women in wrestling, that's almost who we thought of. Though at the same time, there was a Wendy Richter and there was a Fabulous Moolah. And it's so interesting to watch, you know, Fabulous Moolah, old tapes of her, and she would just beat the crap out of people. And then you would see in the 80s, it was dominated by female wrestling figures, people like Miss Elizabeth, that then later brought a Sunny. And, you know, Sunny calls herself that she's not the first lady, that she was the first diva of professional wrestling. And that then she started to wrestle some, even though herself was not a wrestler. And I think for a while, we kind of got stuck with this, oh, you're a female, oh, you want to be in wrestling, okay, let's bring you in. And maybe some of them weren't as experienced as maybe they should have. And that's not saying everybody. That's saying some of them. And I think, unfortunately, on the mainstream market, that's what sort of latched on for a while. And so now I think we're really seeing some of the great women talent that is out there in the world of professional wrestling, because they have proven that they can go past the standard, quote-unquote, that was there before, that they can bring an offer. I don't want to say something different, that they can bring an offer just as much as the guys and also something different than guys can bring inside of a ring.
Ring of Honor, surprisingly, has just introduced its Woman of Honor championship. They are in the midst of a tournament right now, which will culminate later this spring. What do you think about a major promotion like Ring of Honor that has had a lot of great female competitors ply their trade there over the years, just now getting a championship for that division?
I mean, I think it's unfortunate that they're a little bit late behind the trend. But, I mean, what you said is absolutely correct. They've had great talent. I'm interested in seeing, you know, how do they develop this moving forward? I mean, I like I'm trying to think. Like, Jessie Brooks, I think she's in – no, they've already had the qualifying matches, so I know she was in, which was great to see her and see the how she has been pushing the envelope and changed herself from when I first met her and when she was first starting in wrestling. I'm a big fan of Jessie. Brandi Rhodes, who honestly, I didn't even know that she knew how to wrestle, to be perfectly frank, and to see her move forward in Women of Honor as well. So I'm looking forward to what they bring, because Ring of Honor has a good established history of good wrestling. Forget men or women, just good wrestling. So I'm looking forward to what they bring next and the level of talent that will continue to increase inside of the world of wrestling.
Well, we have a few minutes here in the show left, and I want to give you ample time. So if there is anything you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything you have, social medias, upcoming appearances, merchandise, your favorite drugstore, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm nothing if not a dirty, dirty shill sometimes. So there are a lot of great, exciting events out there. If you want to see the independent wrestling calendar, you can check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/deskofphilstamper. I post it a lot of other places, but that is one place that I know that I put it at because I have control over it. So check out the indie calendar if you're interested in finding out what's going on near you. Again, facebook.com/deskofphilstamper. In just the next 2 weeks, so tomorrow is CZW's 19th anniversary. That's right. We have independent companies celebrating not only just double digits, but almost two decades of competition. CZW at the Colossal Sports Academy at the Coliseum at 333 Preston Avenue in Voorhees, New Jersey. And I just did that off memory. Is taking place tomorrow. There's going to be a lot of great action, including Ricky Shane Page, who's CZW's World Heavyweight Champion, teaming up with Pentagon. I know he has a different name now. My brain just went totally dead on what exactly that name is. And Ray Phoenix versus Sammy Callahan and Jake and Dave Crist. I think that's going to be an exciting main event. But there's so much more that's also going to take place on that event that's going to change the pacing of CZW as we lead into 2018. And CZW over the next 2 months has five events. So it starts tomorrow in Voorhees. Then next week, Revolver returns, Pro Wrestling Revolver, in Dayton, Ohio at the Rockstar Arena at 1106 East 3rd Street in Dayton, Ohio. Again, off memory. That's going to be a fantastic event. You have it's NATO Takes Dayton. So NATO is making his way from Japan into the United States. We have him at Revolver. We'll be seeing who he's going to face and what we're going to announce for him very soon. It's already sold out. It's gotten that much attention and so quickly. So we've been sold out for about 6 weeks. And then the day after, MCW returns to the MCW Arena at 1000 Joppa Farm Road in Joppa, Maryland. That's MCW Pro Wrestling. You can check it out at mcwprowrestling.com. And it is our anniversary event, but it's a very special Horseman anniversary because we are bringing Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson, Barry Windham, and J.J. Dillon will all be a part of that event on Saturday, February 17th. There's so much great independent wrestling action out there. Don't miss it. Don't sleep on it. Not only do you have the opportunity to meet real legends in this business, and I'm not just talking about people who used to be on television and you might not see them as much. I'm not talking about people who are coming from other countries, but people that you're going to wish you had the opportunity to see them earlier on when the ticket price wasn't so sky high that you had to pay four figures to go sit in the nosebleeds at WrestleMania. This is your opportunity, and to get on board now with them and to see some of these events. Like I mentioned, Revolver sold out next week in Dayton. MCW, I don't have the exact ticket count, but if it goes the way last year's anniversary did with the Hardys, we had to close the doors because we literally could not fit anybody else into the building. So I'm really excited at the state of independent wrestling today. I will say from my own personal perspective, and again, I come from that place of wanting wrestling to do not just well, but to do better, that it always comes down to as well as how good is somebody marketing? Do people even know you have an event? What drives me crazy with the indie calendar and putting it together sometimes is going on a company's Facebook page on Friday and seeing like, oh, they don't have anything about any upcoming events. Okay, I'll move on. And then the next week, if I happen to go back to their page, oh, wait a minute. They had an event Saturday? Oh, here's pictures. Okay. Oh, I see six people were in the crowd because they didn't talk about it. They didn't advertise it. They didn't put anything out there. And that drives me crazy because I see on the other side the places who do advertise, that do put out good content, that do put out good publication and have good marketing, and they fill their house. And I think that door is there for people to use, and not enough people utilize the resources that are out there for them to market themselves, and that's really the way that people are going to succeed, by continuing to market and push themselves. If you think about it in two perspectives, if you have a mom-and-pop restaurant, like a sub shop that maybe isn't along Main Street, but it's along some side street somewhere, how do people even know you're there? Well, you got to advertise. You got to say and let people know, hey, I'm over here. Maybe you have to work with other businesses around you to start getting word of mouth around. You know, it takes work to do it. At the same time, well, we all know Coke. We all know Bud Light. We all know Walmart. But guess what advertisement and commercials you always see? Bud Light and Walmart and Coke. These are brands that we already know of, but spend money on advertising, millions of dollars on advertising every year to make sure you don't forget them. And I think that's key in that people seem to cycle off and forget that it really takes a conscious effort to do good promotion. That was my rant then for the moment. So if you want to follow me, you can follow me online on social media. I mentioned on Facebook at Desk of Phil Stamper. And then on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, and Twitch, you can follow me at PS Phenom. That's PSPHENOM.
Well, Mr. President, I want to thank you for being on today. It's been an extreme pleasure having you on the show. Hopefully our paths will cross at some point in the not-so-distant future. And fans, definitely get out there, support all of independent professional wrestling. CZW turning 19 tomorrow. That's an incredible run. You don't see a lot of companies last anywhere close to that. So get out there, support them as they celebrate. And we will be back with you Sunday afternoon. Lauren Pettis, great ring announcer in the Northeast, going to be joining us. And we'll be back with you a week from today with one of our local professional wrestlers, Jackson Bourne. So make sure you get out there, support your local independent wrestling. If you're in Seattle or anywhere in the Puget Sound, try to get to 3-2-1 Battle tonight to see off Otis the Gimp as he is leaving the area, moving back down to California. He's been a staple up here, helped 3-2-1 Battle get off the ground and become the phenomenon it is. So we'll miss him. Get out there, support him tonight, and we will talk to you on Sunday.